You're listening to the Vermont Edition podcast. This is Meg Malone, the Vermont Edition digital producer, just here to let you know that this episode has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last year, Vermont lawmakers legalized the personal use and possession of small amounts of cannabis. But many advocates and lawmakers acknowledged that it was likely just the first step in the process of legalization. This year, as in several years past, the Senate is leading the charge for a tax and regulate system for marijuana. There's also now a House bill working toward the same goal. And as neighboring states and Canada have started legal sales of their own, the question about allowing a legal cannabis market in Vermont suddenly seems more pressing. Still, it's by no means a sure thing. Here's Vermont House Speaker Mitzi Johnson speaking on our show last month about reservations about commercial cannabis.
I still have some concerns about it, so I'm actually quite undecided. I'm concerned about youth usage prevention and road safety. I recognize that there are reasons that every other state that's chosen to legalize has chosen to go with a tax and regulate system, and I appreciate that there is a kind of a chain of custody and a consumer safety issue, and so our committees will be taking a really good look at it.
So there is much left to do in Montpelier before Vermont could begin to see a retail cannabis market. But today we're going to look at the legislation that's being worked up in the Senate and use that as our base to explore what a taxed and regulated cannabis market might look like here. We're joined by Dick Sears, longtime state senator from Bennington. He's the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he's the lead sponsor of S-54, the current proposal advancing a tax and regulate system. Senator Sears, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Before we get into the specifics of your legislation, can you just give us your philosophical approach to the issue of legalization and why it's important enough for you to want to be the lead sponsor of this bill?
Well, actually, there's six of us that are the lead sponsors. My name just went first for some reason. I guess because I'm the oldest.
Seniority.
If I look at the current situation, we have a legalized product, but people don't have any way to legally buy that product in the state of Vermont. I guess some Vermonters could go to Massachusetts and buy it and bring it back, and that would be a legal market. But most Vermonters don't have that opportunity. So I look at this as a consumer protection bill in many ways, because once you have regulated the product, the consumer will know what they're buying. Right now, people are buying it on the black market and have been forever in Vermont. And some will continue to do so. But with a tax and regulated market, you would be able to go in and you would know that the product has been tested from seed to sale. And that's what the difference is to me. It's sort of like right now we kind of have the Wild West where you can go buy from anyone who has the product, but you're not sure what you're buying.
And you're not doing so legally.
And you're not doing it legally. The sale of the product is not legal. The possession of it is.
Does your career working in residential programs for teenagers and youth who were facing problems of their own inform your thoughts on issues around marijuana?
Yeah, and I think we're clearly not stating that this is a good thing to do, but it's a thing that, according to the RAND report, 80,000 Vermonters take part in. And it's important for kids particularly to be educated about some of the concerns with the drug. Unfortunately, a lot of the efforts towards prevention were to just say no, and they were there was a lot of misinformation. I have no objection, and I hope that a part of the tax unregulated eventually by April of 21, when this bill actually takes place and sales could actually take place, that we'll have in place the information for kids and to make sure that they realize it's not a product to take lightly and they should probably not be using it.
So you mentioned April of 2021, Senator Sears,
yep.
And that's in this Senate bill. so far anyway, that's right. when legal sales would start. I mean, that's when you'd be having licenses before that, and the retail sales could actually start in April of 2021.
Right.
Central to your bill is the creation of the Cannabis Control Board. And so can you explain that? It seems like it's sort of similar to our Liquor Control Board.
Yeah, it is to some extent, although it's more modeled on the Massachusetts model and some of the other states that have instituted a tax and regulated system. So the Cannabis Control Board would be making recommendations and setting rules and so forth for the sale of cannabis, and would be the experts in the field of how to best protect Vermonters. And again, if you look at it as a consumer protection effort, how to make sure that Vermonters, when they buy this product, are aware of the impact of it, the potential downside, and the other factors. So, for example, if they're selling edibles, to make sure it's clearly marked on the package, the dosage in that edible, what one might expect in terms of time before the impact of that edible comes to fruition. So a lot of those types of things would be in the rules that this board would set. They would also be the licensing authority for the retail outlets as well as for the grow facilities. And we envision smaller grow facilities than in some other states, allowing, as long as it can be securely grown, that the marijuana product would be grown in secure facilities, but they'd be smaller than some of the other states. And this would create maybe more niche markets for different strains of marijuana and so forth.
When you say they would be small compared to other states, are you putting an actual physical size restriction on the grow?
No, we haven't, but the way that the legislation would work is we'd be looking for smaller grow and make it eligible for people. I have to reread the legislation. I didn't bring it with me, but there are but honestly, there are, it's a lot of very technical aspects to the whole growing. But the concern in some states, it's like, you know, the Marlboro company has taken over the marijuana market, and we don't want to have that happen.
Why not? What would be the problem with that?
Well, the problem is one large producer, and they would set the rules, set the rates, set everything, and we think it's better to do it the Vermont way, which would be small operations. I think more if you look at the beer market for special brews and so forth that we've developed in Vermont and how popular they are around the country, actually have people coming to Vermont just to try some of the craft breweries.
And, you know, there's no prohibition on the very, very large multinational breweries. So why not just let Vermonters decide if they want their craft cannabis or, you know, big cannabis?
There is in the bill, there are preference given to the small to Vermonters over other outsiders.
That's right, because in the legislation, it's not a requirement that license holders be Vermont residents, but the Cannabis Control Board would give preference to small-scale growers, to growers that have a social justice aspect as well to their operation.
And I want to mention that a lot of the bill, S-54, was developed based upon a bill that passed the Senate, S-241, a few years back, but also the work of the Governor's Commission on Marijuana that worked last year and filed its report this January. So we incorporated a lot of their ideas.
We got a note from Buddha802 on Reddit, who says, I'd like to see provisions that box out corporations from coming here and taking over the landscape, and better yet, regulations that incentivize craft, artisanal, and small-scale operations. What good is legalization if the money is going right back out of state? And let's go to Kim, who's calling in from Jericho. Hi, Kim. You have thoughts on this as well?
Hi. Thank you very much. My comments and my thoughts lately have been that I just hear people conflating the concept of legalization and commercialization as one and the same thing. And the commercialization is really a big factor for me in going forward. You know, Senator Sears made great points about children needing to be armed with information about the dangers of the THC, the drug, and you know, when, you know, they probably shouldn't be using it. In my mind, it's definitely shouldn't be using it. And And I'm just wondering, you know, once the commercialization starts and big money gets in, how we're going to, you know, how we're going to pay for that message, those types of health issues that could arise. It will get drowned out just like it did with tobacco and alcohol with commercialization, in my opinion.
Kim, let me give that to Senator Sears, because this is one of the questions about your legislation and this idea of educational messaging and where the money from the tax and regulate system should go towards. And we haven't gotten into that tax part, but in terms of what Kim is asking here with, you know, getting the message out, especially to young people, and that's certainly one of the concerns of our health commissioner, who would like to see money going toward that before we ever get to legal retail marijuana. How do you see it?
Well, I see it as a two-part process. One is to set up the regulated system through the Cannabis Control Board, which is what S-54 does. The second part would be for the governor and his health commissioner and others to propose to the legislature in the next budget, which would be the FY21 budget, money for programs that would align themselves to prevention that have been proven effective in other places. There's no point in spending money on programs that aren't going to be effective in terms of prevention. So I would see that as a two-step process. I don't know why if the Commissioner of Health found it unconscionably talking about a tax and regulated system without that, why the governor didn't put $6 million in the budget for his prevention programs this year. But he can certainly do it before the regulation becomes effective. The legislature could do it. We can do it in anticipation of some of the funds. But I wanted to, and the sponsors of the bill decided early on as we developed the bill, to try to focus on the tax and regulate portion, the cannabis control, creating the cannabis control system, and not get bogged down with which prevention program works, which doesn't. I think that's a job of the appropriations committees and the Health and Welfare Committee in the Senate, the Human Services Committee in the House, and others to work on those programs for prevention. And I have even if it's $20 million in revenue, which would be very low to coming in the first year in FY21, I have no problem with spending certain amount of that on prevention and, frankly, roadside safety, which we haven't discussed yet here, but is certainly a topic. But I think I want to put first things first, and that is having the structure in place to regulate the sale of the product.
Yeah, so you see them as separate pieces of legislation. Like, here's the tax and regulate framework, and then what we do in terms of education and where the money goes are separate concerns that can jump off of, you know, what the system actually looks like.
Well, I mean, there are concerns here whether we ever tax and regulate. We have, again, I go back to the RAND report, which estimated 80,000 and Vermonters, and I guess you could argue 20,000 either way. But at any rate, that's a large percentage of Vermonters using marijuana, whether we regulate it, legalize it, or whatever we do. And so, you know, that's there no matter how you structure the sale. And I would rather have this consumer protection portion in place and then begin to – and then work on the other sections either simultaneously. But next year, I would anticipate that the governor would certainly put money in his budget for those things.
Let's go to Ben, who's calling in from Westminster. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Jane. It's Ben Mitchell. We've talked about this before. I just want to say I'm concerned when you talk about safety regulations, that's really just a handout to the corporations who have the scale and the size to take over the market and create regulations that make it impossible for small producers. And I really think that this is an opportunity to create a windfall for small farmers and to really create a brand within Vermont that's different from the corporate brand that you see in other states that have gone before us. The other piece that I want to push back on is the fears about young people getting involved with marijuana. I've been teaching for 30 years. Young people are already involved in marijuana. They know a lot more about it than the old people who are trying to figure out how to regulate this. And rather than focusing on fear-mongering and things which just play into the corporate model, we should really defend small farmers and create standards that have to do with preserving the local sourcing and the small production. If you do that, then you create a market which not only provides money for taxing to the state, but then it also provides incomes. And any of us who are trying to survive the winter in Vermont know that it's really hard to make money in Vermont. And
well, Ben, let me stop you there, Ben, because I want to bring this up because you get us to a point that we started to, like a little bit of a road that we started to go down and then didn't go further down with Senator Sears here in this bill, which, you know, as he mentioned, doesn't put a specific acreage size or number of plant size on what kinds of sizes the grow operations could have. But it seems like that's being done in some ways through the licensing process. So the Cannabis Control Board under your legislation, Senator Sears, would be able to issue five different types of licenses. And those are cultivator, product manufacturer, wholesaler, retail, or testing laboratory. Yep. And it's a little confusing to me in the language, but each license holder could only have, you know, one of that type of license. So if you're a cultivator, you have one cultivator license, but would that mean that you only have one location where you're allowed to grow?
It could, yes. That's the design here to make it small, as Ben was just pointing out. But it has to be profitable. And so for the farmer and for anybody else involved, so that would determine to some extent the size, but I would hope that we would have a number of small growers.
But is that explicit? Because it was confusing to me.
It seems like
what you're saying is
it's our intent. Let me put it this way: it's our intent, and I think it is. And right now, we're actually marking up the bill. As I left, we were going through line by line, looking at that, and one of our goals is to make that. Certainly clear that it's our intent not to have the mega corporations involved in Vermont.
But when you talk about it having to be profitable, if it's in the bill that a retailer holds a retail license but is only allowed to have one retail location, is that realistic to think about, you know, in terms of the capital that's needed to start this up and the expertise that you'd restrict retailers to, like, you only get your one location in Brattleboro. You cannot have one in Manchester as well.
Right. I think it's realistic, at least to the start, because if you look at the system with the dispensaries, we just allowed satellite offices. With one, each dispensary can have one satellite, and that's the medical marijuana model. And yet, that worked as worked with problems, but it is a model, and it does provide. They have the license to both cultivate as well as sell the product.
Right. So but you wouldn't restrict people to only one type of license.
Right.
You could be both a cultivator and a retailer.
You could be. Yeah. You could be vertical or horizontal or, you know, whatever. Those things may change as the bill progresses, by the way. So the comments from folks like Ben are extremely helpful in as we, we introduce a bill. And I've rarely seen a bill that didn't make significant changes that went through the process. And part of that process is hearing from folks like Ben and other Vermonters about the changes that they think need to be made.
Well, some more Vermonters weighing in here and sharing their thoughts. Michael in East Dummerston says, it's important for individual states to define the systems to control the market while they still can. If not, big pharma and big agriculture will do it for them, and they won't be looking out for the little guys. Keith says, no reason for it to be any different than alcohol. I don't necessarily think that a weed that anyone can grow should be taxed, but if it gets them out of the Stone Age, then whatever. Lan in St. Albans says, our state is losing so much in revenue. Let's move this forward and learn from other progressive states who already have systems in place. Glenn opposes treating it like alcohol, saying implementing this under Title VII, which regulates alcohol, is horrific legislative counsel. It's modeled on pure ignorance of the reality of drugs in America. And Glenn links to a website with an alternate proposal for cannabis through Title 26 of the state statutes covering occupations and professions. Mm-hmm. Glenn goes on to say, as an emerging industry, we don't want the negative baggage that comes from the alcohol and tobacco industries polluting our identity as an industry and profession. It's short-sighted to lump these together. Let's go to Mark, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Mark. What are your questions or concerns?
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call, and I really appreciate your program. And Senator Sears, you know me. This is Mark Hughes. I'm just checking in with you. I'm hoping you're having a great day, sir, and thank you for your leadership. I wanted to just obviously, you know, point to the concerns that we brought before the committee and just see if we can just get a little dialogue on it. The fact that of those three reports, that there was really no mention of the impact as a result on the war on drugs on the communities of color across the state, indeed across the United States. And, you know, the concern is obviously, you know, as everybody's racing to the bank, that we just leave a whole lot of damage unchecked. Maybe we should be talking about, you know, addressing this in Section 901, 903. I know there's a lot of conversation going on. I was just wondering if you could just speak to that for a few minutes, and I'm going to take your response offline, okay?
Mark, thanks for the call. So, Senator Sears, it is in the bill that license applicants who have an eye towards social justice will get preference, and Mark wondering about that and how to treat disparities of people of color in the cannabis industry.
Right. Well, we're working on that. I mean, and as Mark knows, the Senate Judiciary Committee has been a leader in trying to achieve social justice. And I would say that the bill is actually improving from where it started in those areas, thanks to folks like Mark and others who have given us thoughts on how to deal with this. For example, to try to give preference to folks who are have a record and not automatically disqualify them, but at the same time not giving an advantage to somebody who had their record expunged, for example. So there's a lot of issues that we're working through, but we definitely feel that the social justice issues and folks that were left behind by the war on cannabis and other drugs need to be accounted for in this bill, and we're doing our best to do that.
So just to be clear, before you go to your second point there, people who have a record that includes a conviction for marijuana in the past, whether or not it has been expunged by the time they apply for a license, under your legislation, people who have a conviction would not be barred from being a license holder.
Would not be automatically barred from holding a license. There may be other reasons why they might be. You don't – I mean, you know – you can't just say just don't automatically disqualify somebody because they have a record. That's what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there may be other good reasons to disqualify somebody that have nothing to do with their record. Maybe they're for whatever reason. I want to make clear, though, that we looked at who is currently in jail for possession of marijuana. And there was nobody in jail at that time that we looked last week. But there were 13 people on probation. Excuse me, 8 people on probation for possession of marijuana solely. 3 of them were for possession of less than 2 ounces, which would have been more than 1 ounce. And the other 5 were much larger amounts. So if you know, I want to make clear that if somebody is caught with trafficking 50 to 100 pounds of marijuana, we look at that as a little different than one who was caught for possession of less than 2 ounces. So even today, there are fewer and fewer people who are either on – there's nobody incarcerated and there's only 8 people on probation right now.
Thanks for that clarification, and I'm interested to perhaps learn more about those 8 people who are on probation just for possession at some other point or in some other show, because, you know, it's interesting as we look at Vermont's criminal justice laws and laws around cannabis possession. And actually, let me ask you about this word, too, because officially in both the House and the Senate legislation, cannabis is used instead of marijuana. Yeah. And while we're talking about issues around race and social justice, can you explain why it's explicit that under Vermont law we would be calling this the Cannabis Control Board instead of the Marijuana Control Board?
Well, quite frankly, the word marijuana and it came from years ago, not long before I was born and you and I were around, was kind of a slang out of Mexico. And it was used to derogatorily, as I understand it, so that the proper term really is cannabis. That's the name of the plant. And so that does have a social justice connotation using the term marijuana.
Let me pause here. And again, we haven't really talked about the tax portion yet. But before we get into what we can on that, let's bring in Karen Lounsbury, who's a professor of pharmacology at UVM's Larner College of Medicine and co-director of the school's medical cannabis course. Karen Lounsbury, thanks for being back again. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
So one of the things that you've been looking at as Vermont moves forward with potential legislation around a legal framework for retail cannabis are some of the things that we can learn from other states that already have this in place, like Colorado. And, you know, if you were to say, here's the biggest takeaway, here's my headline about, you know, what happened in Colorado that I hope Vermont is paying attention to, what would it be?
First, I just want to mention that I, as a faculty of University of Vermont, I want to make it clear that my comments and opinions are my own opinions and based on my research and not necessarily the standpoint of the University of Vermont. With that said, I think the biggest thing that we're seeing with Colorado now, they have quite a lot of data now from 2015 and on with respect to public health aspects of the legalization. And there have not been any dramatic changes in public health is sort of the take-home message. There haven't been a huge increase in car accident deaths. There hasn't been a huge increase in the dropout rate of high school students. So the huge dangers that we were really concerned about from the public health standpoint haven't shown to be true. However, there have been some changes that have occurred, which include there have been an increase in car accidents, there have been an increase in emergency room visits due to cannabis, and while cannabis has a relatively low toxicity, the anxiety effects of overdosing from cannabis can be quite severe. So there have been some changes in that aspect. I think with respect to the Vermont law, I would put an emphasis on making sure that we have protections for children, because that's really the group that can be the most affected by it as a drug of abuse, for example.
And do you have ideas or thoughts from other places on the best way to do that? I mean, we heard from one caller who was concerned about, once companies come in, it changes for young people. Look at alcohol and tobacco. But on tobacco, we've seen a significant decrease over the years that seems to correlate with greater educational resources being devoted to making sure that young people don't smoke or don't continue to smoke. So, you know, how could we incorporate that kind of education in an effective way that's targeted at young people towards marijuana?
Yeah, it seems as though the young people are most affected by if they think that a company is trying to take advantage of them. That's when I think the tobacco companies, finally the education came out that the tobacco companies are trying to get you addicted. So by making sure that there are protections against marketing to children, if you look at, there are a lot of marketing already for marijuana products that are really targeted towards kids, so putting a restriction on that, and also making sure that you have some sort of a good field test for sobriety, because people that are under the influence, there is an increased risk of driving. And the overall adult risk for addiction is quite small. So the under the age of 21, some would say 25, the risk of addiction to marijuana is much higher than it is to an adult who starts maybe using it as a medication for medical cannabis or even using it recreationally.
So you mentioned a roadside test. That's clearly a problem. It's a sticking point for Vermont's governor. It's also a problem finding an effective and efficient one. Would you think moving forward with a retail market is still worthwhile before there's a safe and efficient and effective roadside test?
I think that they could use, there are some tests that are available that if they're done, in fact, there's actually an app that's available for testing whether you have too much of an influence. And it's based on being able to pay attention in the presence of distractors. So if any of you have ever played a video game where you need to totally pay attention and there's something that's coming from the outside that you have to ignore, there could be a test like that that's at least temporarily in place because when you're under the influence of cannabis, the ability to ignore distractors that are coming from the side is much harder. So they might be able to at least have a gauge for driving, but I don't know whether those would hold up in under law because they haven't been proven. So more research really needs to be done on how you can get a really accurate field test.
Karen Lounsbury is a professor of pharmacology at UVM's Larner College of Medicine and co-director of the medical cannabis course there. Karen, thank you very much for talking with us again.
Thank you.
So, Senator Sears, one thing that we have left very short amount of time to talk about, but again, this is something that's up for consideration within the bill, the exact numbers and how is the tax portion of a tax and regulate system. You're suggesting taxing it at 10% state tax?
10% excise tax.
And that's on top of the sales tax?
No, there's no sales tax. There's a 10% excise tax as it the Senate Finance Committee will making the determination of the taxes, but as that leaves my committee, it'll have a 10% excise tax and a 2% up to 2% local option tax that any local government that chooses to have within their boundaries a cannabis establishment would be able to receive from the gross revenues.
Okay, so a couple different kinds of taxes that would be allowed to be levied, and in terms of local control, municipalities, would they be allowed to opt out and say, I'm sorry, no retail establishments, no grow establishments within our boundaries?
They can opt out through a vote of the at a town meeting or a special meeting, could vote to not have any establishments.
So what do you think? Do you think this is going to happen this year? We're in the first year of a biennium. You know, a lot of things get kicked down the road. What's your gut say?
You know, it depends. You know, the House will have an opportunity, hopefully, after the Senate disposes of the bill and gets it over to them. My gut says it's got a 50-50 chance of passing and getting signed by the governor. And we'll see where it goes and see how the House deals with it. As you said, there's a House bill that's been introduced, but I expect that the House committees will be dealing with S-54 hopefully we'll improve it.
Well, good. Lots more to discuss as this moves through Montpelier, and certainly if it gets voted on and becomes law, and then we'll wait to see what the governor does, whether he signs it, would leave it without a signature, or would veto, and what would happen then. So lots more to discuss and many more details still to come on this. Bennington Senator Dick Sears, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee and one of the lead sponsors of S-54. Thank you very much for talking Tax and Regulate with us.
Thank you for having me.